This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk WKAR AM 870. I'm Matt Ludke filling in today, and what a show we have for you. We'll take a nice long look back at a wild weekend in college basketball, from Aaron Kraft's controversial block charge call to Indiana's escape over Temple. We'll recap a relatively easy weekend for the Michigan schools and take a quick look forward to next weekend's action. I have Emmanuel Berry in-house and Aaron Young on the booth, and we'll talk all about college basketball and more. And we'll also have a little bit of time for Charles Barkley.
Yeah, we do have to talk about Charles Barkley.
You always have time for Charles Barkley.
Anytime he is appearing at every commercial break, either in the commercials or in the send-off to the commercials, he was pretty unavoidable. He was all over the weekend.
Yeah,
well, we're going to start dreaming about him soon, unfortunately. That's what CBS wants.
It's what CBS is going to get.
Space Jam 2, anyone?
You know, if they lose their talent again, who knows going to help them this time? Michael Jordan's not there to play with Bugs and the gang. We'll see, though. All right, let's start off with Barkley's biggest bone to pick this weekend, which was Aaron Kraft and Ohio State escaping over Iowa State and former Spartan Corey Lucius. The block charge call, what's everybody's thoughts on that?
You know, you miss calls in every game. Like, there's missed calls all throughout the game, and it really shouldn't come down to one call. And I don't know, does it matter if his foot was hovering over the line or not? It happened.
Exactly. And it's a bang-bang play regardless. I mean, those are generally regarded as like the toughest fouls to call in sports. So, I mean, it's understandable that the guy made a mistake, apparently. But the thing with, you know, that getting all the attention, I understand that there's other things in the game, but when that happens, when there's, say, two possessions left or three possessions left, when it swings like that, it's hard to come back from. And I feel for Iowa State, but at the same time, you have to give Kraft credit for being there, being heady enough to make that play, being, you know, brave enough to make that play, and then at the end, hitting the shot to win it anyway. I mean,
yeah,
it might be a different conversation if things go differently on that last shot.
Yeah, it might be. But also, I think CBS actually interviewed the commissioner, I forget his exact title, you know, what he does, but they interviewed him, and he basically said that, you know, they might take a look at it down the road and kind of see, you know, how they can prevent it happening in the future. But the reality is, like you said, Matt, it's a bang bang play, and for the human eye to try to do that, I mean, in order to see that, they had to slow it down and freeze the frame just to see that.
And it was still kind of debatable.
Right.
I mean, when you're going at, you know, just a freeze frame, and plus with the feet and the restricted area. And you have to look if he's squaring his body. It's like the ref has to look at three different things in the span of half of a blink of an eye. I understand the criticism that he's going to get, but at the same time, that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's part of the human element. And frankly, you know, it's going to happen. It happens every game. I mean, I think at a certain point, you can take too much out of the human element part of it. And it doesn't become a game. It just becomes some sort of robotic, you know, I'm not sure what the term I'm looking for here, but you take that human element out of it, and I don't think it becomes as, if everything was perfect, you know, there's no joy in that.
It's kind of boring.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's definitely some drama. Look at how much, we're talking about it right now. It led the show. It's a discussion generator. I mean, it's part of sports. And, you know, the fights after the games are sometimes as fun as the games themselves.
Now, do you guys think that Kraft sometimes is, I don't know if I want to use the word flop, because he's a heck of a defender, but sometimes his body will jerk a lot sometimes when he goes down. It looks like he's worked on that.
I mean, I'm surprised that I'm able to sit here and calmly talk about it without my blind hatred of Aaron Kraft getting in the way.
That's okay.
Causing me to say something I'm going to regret. But yeah, he's definitely the beneficiary of a great reputation. I mean, I feel like he's had a reputation as a defensive stopper since before he even got to Ohio State, and he's gotten the benefit of the calls. He reminds me a lot of Travis Walton, except that he will get 3 more charge calls a game than Travis used to, and he was just as good of a defender. But again, I mean, he makes the big shot to win it. He makes all the defensive plays at the end. You got to give him credit at the end of the day. He wins games for him. So I hate him, but I'd love to have him on the team.
Yeah, my mom dislikes him a lot. She talks about him a lot. But yeah, he's a great player. I mean, got to give credit where it's due.
Exactly. So. They're moving on. They live to die another day. So maybe we'll have at least one more opportunity to just sit there angrily and watch him do things on the basketball court. So that's a reason to celebrate. Now, they were not the only the Big Ten team to have a rough go yesterday. It was actually all 4 games were tight with Big Ten schools, except for maybe the Minnesota-Florida game. But Indiana, man, the skin of their teeth over Temple, who was every bit up to the challenge. They looked really good. Khalif White, or Wyatt, rather, just dominated the entire game. They had a weird strategy where I don't know if it was a strategy or just Wyatt getting frustrated, but he would try and come up and get the ball, and if Oladipo was too close, or Olapido, as Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley kept saying yesterday.
We'll talk about name straight, man.
Oh my goodness. Considering that he's a player of the year candidate, you'd think they know how to pronounce his name. I get it. Oladipo is a little uncommon. I mean, it's not, his name isn't, you know, Victor Johnson or something, but seriously, guys, you've been in here for weeks. This is what you're getting paid to do. Olapido, and not only once, but just repeatedly, over and over. It's a sideshow.
Well, when you're used to, you know, LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony, simple, very simple names.
Exactly.
You know.
And names that don't change every 3 years.
Right. Yeah. Well.
Ugh. But Indiana, back to the game. Wyatt, if he couldn't get the ball, he would just kind of go out and stand by half court, and he would drag Oladipo with him, and then they would just be playing 4-on-4, and pretty much every time they did that, Temple would score. So I don't know if we're going to see more of that moving forward with Syracuse. I doubt it, because it was pretty unorthodox, if it was a strategy at all.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to see, because he's all, I mean, I know when we played him, it was just like anytime anyone took it into the lane, Oladipo would help off his guy and rip and strip the ball. And I mean, Dawson had like 6 turnovers himself that game, I feel like. But that's the kind of thing. If you take him out of there, what are they going to do? They're 4-on-4, and Temple scored on him with ease, it seemed like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. You're right. I don't know if that was a game plan or if that's just the way it played out.
Right.
I mean, I would assume it had to be part of the game plan, because, like you said, I think it would have been too weird that's, you know, that's just what happened. But yeah, Indiana had a challenge versus Temple. I mean, Temple's a good team, but you know, Indiana came out the victor, so they move on. I think they got a challenge against Syracuse, but.
I do too, although I am never a believer in Syracuse. They're one of those teams that I kind of avoid like the plague when it comes to filling out brackets. Although this year is an exception, because every team that I had a rule about picking, I picked them anyway, and they burned me. Thank you. Thank you, Bo Ryan. Thank you, Pittsburgh. Oh, my goodness. Bruce Weber at Kansas State killed me. It's bad.
Well, you probably only put down like a couple $1,000 on your bracket, right?
Right. You know, only all my life savings I put into my brackets, but you know, I'll
smart man. Invest, you know, you take some wise investments, clearly.
You know, you gotta roll the dice sometimes, Aaron.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta spend money to make money, mm-hmm. and sometimes you come out on the short end of it, but. We'll see. Maybe I'll have enough savings by next March so I can get back in this crazy thing again. We'll see.
I never fill out brackets. I just find it disappointing. So I just watch the games.
Right. I mean, yeah. Brackets, basically. And talking about brackets is like a seasonal form of fantasy football, where you tell people your stories and they don't really care. They only care about their brackets and what they're doing. But, I mean, if somebody ends up winning $1 million on ESPN, more power to them. Great job. Pat on the back. But, all right, let's move on. Let's take a look at the state of basketball in the state of Michigan. And things are going pretty darn good. 2 big wins Saturday. Michigan over VCU, which the Spartan in me really was looking for VCU to at least challenge Michigan, and not so much. Not so much on that. Within about 3 minutes, you knew they were in some serious trouble.
They didn't have the size they needed, and it was just a field day down low.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. Anytime Mitch McGarry goes for 20-something and 15, you know you're in trouble on the interior. That's a team that their big MO, or their whole weakness this year has been inside play, and their front line dominated. Trey Burke didn't even have a good game. He had, I think, as many turnovers as assists. He hasn't really played that great in the tournament, which is, you know, a quiet story since they keep winning. I'm sure he'll take it. But when the front line and everybody else stepped up, I really thought their secondary players would kind of falter against the press, but they handled it as well as anyone could have, and they got a huge, huge victory as a result.
Yeah, I mean, the CBS anchors are basically saying, I don't think they could have played a better game.
Exactly. It was
a perfect game for U of M. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and also it was basically a home game, and we know how good they are at home. So
this is true. Yeah. This is true.
And so that's why I'm curious to see how well they play. I think they got to go to L.A. For their Texas for their game. So it's kind of a away game for them, but we'll see how they play. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was they couldn't have played a better game. I think that game was over before it even started.
Yeah.
VCU had no chance. I think part of the reason that Michigan was able to sort of break that press, it was simply they have multiple guys that can handle the ball quite well. Hardaway can, Burke can. I forget the other guy, Stauskas. He can handle it pretty well too. So
yeah,
they had enough guys to break that press pretty easily. I mean, I would like to see a breakdown, and I don't. There's probably no way to know it, but how many points they had after they broke the press? Because once you break that press, usually you have, it's becomes an advantage for you. It's a 3-on-2 or 4-on-3 or whatever the case may be. And that's what, and they knew that once they broke it, they got a lot of points that way. And I think that's why McCary had, you know, he had 21 points. A lot of those, I think, were just a handful on the break, and they just dumped it to him and slammed.
Exactly. Down. Exactly. I mean, it was a dunk or a layup pretty much every time down the floor. They'd break the press, get into the lane, the defense would collapse, and somebody was going to be open, and 10 times out of 10, they found the right guy, and he scored. I mean, and that's the thing. Usually in the tournament, when teams look really good in one game, it's kind of dangerous because you get a little bit too high, especially the second game of a weekend, so you have 4 days to hear about how awesome you were, you know, and then you come out that next game, and it's Kansas is going to be a bit of a different animal than VCU.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how the front line and the secondary players play against Kansas, but they have every opportunity to beat Kansas. I feel like that game is a total toss-up. It could go either way. Kansas can match them athlete for athlete. They have Withy inside, who has more blocks than anyone could ever dream of, and in his career at least, and a 7-footer is a little bit different than like a 6'8", 215 guy, you know? It's going to be a different game totally than VCU was, so it'll be nice to see a change of pace for them.
Yeah, it's going to be different. Michigan has always had trouble, and I think when they played Michigan State proved this. I mean, they don't have guys besides McCray that I know of that can really defend down low. So I got a feeling they're going to put him on the Kansas player. I forget his name already.
Withy.
So I got a feeling that's going to be a matchup. That's a decent matchup, I think, because Withy's skinnier. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit more mobile. But, you know, McCray, and he's a bigger body, so he's going to be tougher to move.
Yeah,
so
he's a big dude.
Yeah, so they each got their dynamics, which we'll see who comes the winner out on that one. But I think Kansas has a couple other decently sized guys that they can take it down low, post up, and if they do that, I don't think Michigan might have a chance, but that's going to hurt Michigan because they simply cannot defend down low. If they played like they did against VCU, that's gonna be tough for Kansas.
It'd be tough for anybody.
Yeah, they were lights out.
They were.
Well, I think VCU's press hurt them a lot, and I don't think Kansas is gonna come out with
exactly.
Press,
I mean, it'll saying. If Kansas makes it a half court game,
yeah,
it's a different beast.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, that's how MSU managed to, the first time we played U of M, was just go down low. I mean, they can't handle they can't handle post players well. They don't have the defense for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And the size.
Jordan Morgan was their defensive stopper, but he has barely played in the last few weeks. I feel like I heard his minutes drop for the last three games going into VCU, and I don't remember seeing him very much against VCU. So
no, he didn't play at all.
Yeah.
He didn't play 1 minute, and they're keeping a I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if the coach, if there's some sort of internal thing, but they're keeping a low profile on that. I believe he's a senior.
I think so too. And he made all Big Ten defense too, I think.
Yeah,
so
he was a starter throughout the year. I don't know.
It's surprising.
Something happened where he's not getting playing time.
Yeah, there's something they're not telling us there. That's for sure. But and then of course we can move on to Michigan State's victory, which, granted, it was 20-plus, but I was sweating the entire game. That was the most nerve-wracking 20-point win I think I've ever watched.
It's not pretty. It's just not – the wins aren't pretty, but they're there.
Never.
And that's just kind of how it's been this entire year. So
they've been grinders, that's for sure. And Memphis is scary just because, I mean, as you saw in that little run before the half – they went 16-6 in like 3 minutes. It felt like it, you know, at any time they could strike and start turning us over and start hitting threes. And then it was just got a little scary. And then we came out in the second half, established what we were going to do, started throwing towels in the huddle and got a little fired up and took care of business. So good to see.
Yeah. I thought it was over in the second half. You just had that feeling. I didn't have the same feeling watching the game. I didn't feel like it was, a very nerve-wracking game.
Maybe that's just me. I'm always ready to jump off a cliff at the first sign of adversity.
Well,
I would not be a very good basketball player.
I was pretty sure Michigan State was going to match up well against Memphis, and they did. Like I said, I thought that game was over in the second half. I just had the sense that Michigan, no matter what Memphis tried, Michigan State had an answer for him.
Right.
Whether it was down low, whether they tried full court pressure, played the half court game. Michigan State was on fire. You know, they'd throw it down low, then they'd throw it back over the top for Harris to shoot a three or whatever the case might be. Memphis didn't. Just whatever they threw out of Memphis didn't have an answer, and whatever Memphis tried throwing at Michigan State had an answer for him too. So, I thought it was a good game, but I thought it was actually pretty simple for a technically third round game,
right?
For Michigan State, I thought it was actually going to be closer than it was.
And it was closer than the final score.
Oh yeah, the final score made it look like they just.
Yeah,
destroyed them.
We definitely padded that at the end, but
right,
still.
Sure. And so, but it's going to be, Duke's going to be a heck of a challenge. Obviously, that's going to be a very tough game. But I think what bodes well for Michigan State going into Duke is the fact that the Big Ten was so good this year.
Right.
They beat up each other. And so they know how to close out games. They're aware that, what they need to do for that team to finish out a game. And, but these first two games versus Valpo and Memphis, I don't think they really had to do that. I think they had tougher games with the Big Ten teams, Indiana and Michigan and Ohio State throughout the season. I think these are actually two easier games, but Duke's going to be a challenge.
Definitely. I mean, Duke's always a challenge. And it's funny because, we always have this horrific non-conference schedule that, we take a few losses. And this year, we didn't even need it because the Big Ten was so competitive. I mean, we want to be battle tested by March, and usually we do that in our out of conference schedule, but I think we had more than we could handle in the Big Ten, everything and more, and everyone did. I mean, it was a gauntlet to say the least, and that's why, as you're seeing, we've got four Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16. So, I mean, there you go. And with that, it looks like we're going to go to a quick break. Thank you, Emmanuel, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Skip out for the second segment, but we're having fun here on WKAR AM 870. We'll be back with more sports talk after this.
Two big social issues will come before the Supreme Court in the week ahead: the Defense of Marriage Act and California's Prop 8, which effectively bans gay marriage. We'll hear key moments from the arguments and talk with NPR's Nina Totenberg. Join us for all that and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in. This is Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. A cloudy day. The high today will be in the upper 30s. Overnight, it'll be mostly cloudy, and there's a slight chance of light snow tonight. The low 29. Partly sunny with a chance of light snow Tuesday, the high 40. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high of 40.
Hello and welcome back. We are WKAR. This is Sports Talk on AM 870, and we will take a quick look at the upcoming slate of games for the Sweet 16. We'll do you want to start out west, Aaron? Let's start with the bracket that pretty much everyone is cursing and ripping up and just avoiding at all costs. The West is just completely decimated as far as the top seeds go. Only Ohio State left. That's one of the top four, one of the top five, I guess. We've got Ohio State and Arizona, and LaSalle and Wichita State in the Sweet 16 matchup that I think everyone had pegged. You know, nobody believed in Gonzaga, which actually no one did believe in Gonzaga, but I don't know if people thought they were going to go out this quickly. And LaSalle, from the play-in game on Tuesday, now they're in the Sweet 16. They won three games last week, and they beat some good teams to get there.
Yeah, they did. I will agree that I think a lot of people had Gonzaga losing. I actually had them losing to Pitt in technically the third round.
Right.
But it didn't matter because I had Pittsburgh beating them, so my backer was busted anyway on that. But, Wichita State and LaSalle, I mean, when was the last time a play-in I guess they haven't had the play-in games for too many years
very
now.
Long, yeah.
That's probably not going to happen all that often. But you're right. They played some good teams,
Kansas State, even though they were coached by Bruce Weber, who I mentioned earlier, I mean, that's still a solid squad. They were 27-8 in a good conference, and LaSalle is just rolling right now.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's going to be a heck of a matchup. I think Wichita State's probably going to get them on that one. They just seem to have, I think, a better team overall. But I think it's going to be a good matchup. I think both teams are similar in style. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But either way, let's assume that Ohio State, I'm just jumping the gun here, Ohio State got past Arizona. I'm not so sure Wichita State or LaSalle
can
actually match up with Ohio State.
Yeah.
But once you get that far into the tournament, I mean, anything's possible.
Exactly. I feel like if you're making it to the Elite Eight, you can pretty much beat anybody. You're good enough to be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, more power to you going forward. And I don't know if Arizona or Ohio State's gonna beat Arizona. That's going to be a very interesting game. Especially, I mean, Ohio State looked pretty human yesterday versus Iowa State. And Iowa State's actually a really good team, too. They played real well. But Arizona might be a little bit dangerous. Granted, they had to play Harvard and Belmont. So Ohio State's going to be a bit of a step up for them, but we'll see if Charles Barkley's constant touting of the Pac-12 as a legitimate conference is going to come to fruition next week. So we'll check out Arizona. We'll check out Oregon, who, again, everyone said, well, how are they a 12 seed? And here they are in the Sweet 16. Granted, they run into the buzzsaw that is the Louisville Cardinals over in the Midwest bracket, which I guess we can move over there, and that's the one I'm most interested in, obviously, because we have MSU and Duke on the other side of that. But Indianapolis should be a nice place to watch some games because you got two great matchups, and you're pretty much guaranteed a third great matchup on Sunday.
Yeah, I the Louisville Oregon game is going to be very interesting because Oregon, you know what? To be honest, I didn't think they were that great of a team. I didn't think they came out of that great of a conference, but it was a good conference. Don't get me wrong, but they surprised me, so I got to give them credit where it's due. They can beat Louisville. They can, but Louisville just looks they look way too good.
They look like a bunch of machines.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. So, just going based off which team would I rather see MSU play, assuming MSU beat Duke, frankly, at this point, I don't think it matters. Like you said, once you get in so far into the tournament, I don't think it matters who you're playing because it's going to be a good game regardless.
Exactly. Any team that's there is going to be good.
Right. So the Louisville-Oregon game is a very intriguing game. But, you know, I think Michigan State fans would probably rather see a different team than Louisville at this point.
Exactly, especially after last year. And apparently, I mean, they look just as good, if not better, than they did last year. And that was a pretty ugly game. But Oregon, I mean, everyone before the tournament was saying, you know, St. Louis is a possible team that could beat Louisville. And they got run out of the gym versus Oregon. So Oregon, they got something to prove, and they're definitely on their way to proving it.
Yeah, you know what? Just to go back to the point about St. Louis, I think St. Louis, I don't know how many people know this, they lost their coach.
Right.
Unfortunately to cancer, I believe, right?
Rick Majerus.
So. Yeah. And so they, during the regular season and coming into the tournament, they had a lot on their heart. They were playing for him, and, you know, they have a great interim coach, which, frankly, he'll probably just become their main head coach.
Right.
So they had a lot going for them as far as they had a lot of inspiration to play. Not to take any away from the play that they, you know, all the hard work and great, you know, good teams they played, but I think that was overlooked a little bit. They had a lot to play for, and they were playing for a lot. Sometimes when you have that, you just tend to step it up a little bit. But you know, I think they were that maybe their energy just kind of ran out on that,
right?
A little bit.
You know, there's only so many times you can go back to that well.
Right.
I mean, we saw that with the Colts in football, in the NFL last year with Chuck Strong and that whole campaign. You know, they made a great run to the playoffs, and then the wheels kind of fell off.
Yeah, it just eventually you take so much energy. It takes so much energy to do that, and you know, eventually you're going to hit a wall where you're going to meet someone there, and you simply can't get past it. And I think that's what happened with Oregon, and you know, so I thought they were a good team. I had them losing, I think, in the round that they did.
Right.
So I wasn't too surprised by it. But you know, now Oregon gets to play Louisville. So if St. Louis would have been playing Louisville, I think Louisville would have destroyed St. Louis.
Right.
You never know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Or St. Louis is a lot like Wisconsin, I feel like, where, you know, they pride themselves on a low possession game, good defense, long possessions. But then in game, like just like Wisconsin, if you're not hitting your shots, it's tough to beat anybody, because if you can't score, like, the teams you're playing are going to find ways to score. I mean, it seems like up-tempo teams are doing pretty well here so far. I mean, look at Florida Gulf Coast just, like, running Georgetown out of the gym with crazy and-one alley-oops. I mean, just wow. So, I mean, athleticism and up-tempo style seems to be the ticket right now. But, I mean, that's why I love, you know, rooting for Izzo and Michigan State, because we can do it all. We've got every facet of the game covered. We can play slow or fast, and if you're versatile, if you're versatile and you can play any style, then you're never going to be out of a game.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I think that's what Michigan State's good at, is they can adapt to what the defense is showing them. This game against Duke. You know, they're familiar with Duke. I don't think they're going to get any surprises that Izzo's not familiar with. They're not going to try something brand new that, you know, Duke's not going to try anything brand new that Michigan State hasn't seen before.
Right.
So I think that's why a lot of people are expecting it to be a great game. And it's going to be, you know, for the fact that I think they both know each other. I think their styles are similar to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Very similar. You know, I guess we'll see if there's any tricks up any team's sleeves, but I think it's just going to be a hard-nosed game. MSU matches up well against Duke.
We do.
And people kind of expected this game to happen. I think a lot of people probably predicted MSU and Duke to get where they are. And a lot of people are saying this is the one game they're looking forward to, because it's going to be a good game.
Definitely.
And I don't think we'll get on how much hatred there is towards Duke. But, you know,
I don't think we have enough hours in a day
to
cover all of it.
No.
I mean,
I think we were talking before the show, and you mentioned they're basically the Yankees.
They really are.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since Coach K got there, they've, you know, built this sort of, you know, evil, in quote marks, evil empire that, you know, if you aren't a Dukie, you hate Duke. There's absolutely no middle ground. It is black or white. And, you know, hey, I'm happy to hate Duke. I respect them. They're a great school and a great program, but I do not like them one bit.
Well, you know, I think any sports fanatic there's always one team that they don't like for whatever reason. Could be a coach, could be a mascot. Maybe they don't like the mascot.
Right. It does not have to be a rational reason. Anything you can think of is reason enough to hate Duke.
Right. I know people don't like Michigan because they don't like their fight song because it's very catchy and popular. Whatever the reason is, I guess you're entitled to it.
Exactly.
I think it's getting back to the game. I think it's going to be a great game. I'm just because we're talking about it, I'm going to predict that MSU does come out the winner simply because it's closer to home. They're playing in India. I hope we know Duke fans are going to be there. They always show up.
Exactly.
So
we'll see. I mean, and we usually play pretty darn good in Indy, especially in the second weekend of a tournament. And the last time I feel like we played Duke in the Sweet 16 was the Mo Agger dunk over J.J. Redick, which I will never forget for the rest of my life. So hopefully we'll have some highlights of that magnitude, and hopefully we'll get another W over Duke. But, man, and look at that, Louisville too. So we'll have the chance to go Duke and then a school versus Kentucky or from Kentucky in the second weekend of the tournament to get to a Final Four. I'd love to repeat that. It looks like we have a caller here. Mr. Tate, line one.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thank you for adding me on to the show, for taking my telephone call. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great. How are you?
Oh, man, all is well. I'm blessed. Just hear you guys talking a little bit about those Spartans and the upcoming matchup with Duke. I personally think that some of the Spartans may possibly have a little bit of chip on their shoulders, including Tom Izzo, where, you know, Coach K broke Bobby Knight's record last year in New York. So I think, you know, it being March and something that Michigan State is known for, I definitely think they're going to come out with a little bit of chip on their shoulder. And I'm just kind of curious to know how some of these matchups are going to go, you know, when you're looking at, you know, the bigs. And I really expect that they have to, or can only imagine that they would have to have a really big game out of Derek Nix. And I like that. I like how the chemistry and the way that they can kind of switch that up, because you use him for a little bit of that size when it comes to some of that weight. And then you've got Payne, you know, for some athleticism and then his length. But I think ultimately it's going to be Keith Appling that's going to have to lead the way, as everybody is saying, in addition to Gary Harris, who's going to be able to consistently knock down that jump shot. But I had a question for you guys just really quickly. I don't want to get too long-winded.
Mm-hmm.
In the event that Keith Appling isn't performing the way that maybe he should, I know it was a bad matchup a few days ago with some of the athleticism from Memphis, but when does some of the responsibility start falling on the backup? Yes, Denzel Valentine came in and did a very good job, but when do we expect for Travis Trice to come in and kind of make up for some of that? Because like we saw a few years ago, in the Final Four, you know, when Kenan Lucas went down,
mm-hmm.
where Lucas came in and kind of led the way, can we expect some of that to happen between Valentine and Trice in the event that we don't get the kind of production out of Keith Appling that we should?
Well, I think that's a great question. And the thing is, that's the kind of the beauty of Valentine. And you saw it on Saturday with Harris and foul trouble and Appling out. He was able to come in and at least stem the tide. And I think the thing that really they need to do when they get in the game is get the ball to the bigs, because that's how we play our best when we're playing inside out. And really, all you need that guard, you don't need Valentine to come in and be Magic Johnson. You know, you don't need it. You don't even need him to be Keith Appling. You just need him to run the offense. And, you know, Trice will come in and he usually has one bad turnover a game, and then he kind of settles down, starts playing well, makes a play on D, he, great on defense. Valentine's size is huge. As far as being a backup, he's 6'5", he's a big fella. So, you know, that kind of size and ball handling is nice to have off the bench.
And I have one last question for you guys before I get off the air. I know you guys got to go. You're up against the time. Obviously, you know, my personal opinion, I think that turnovers will be the key to the game. I can imagine that they'll start working on that throughout the practice within the next couple of days. I want to find out from you guys a little bit what you guys think the keys to the game are, and if their turnovers, how do you think that they're going to come in against a pretty good defensive Duke team?
Well, I mean, you know, Duke is always going to play that kind of, you know, high ball pressure. They're going to get right in your face and make you work for everything. And that, you know, that kind of scares me. But as far as the turnovers go, as long as they are dead ball turnovers, I you know, they're going to happen. And unfortunately, gosh, you know, we had more than enough of them against Memphis. But when we really get into trouble is when they're a live ball turnover and they just go right the other way and take it in for a score. If we can get it to where, you know, we're just, you know, God forbid the ball just goes out of bounds or something, we can still get back and set our defense. And that's the big thing. We're going to have to play good D on Duke, especially in transition, because, you know, since it's a team from Duke, they're going to be able to shoot the three at pretty much every position. And I believe they can. I mean, other than Plumlee, I'm pretty sure all their starters can shoot threes. So you've got to be ready. We've got to guard the three-point line. And if we turn it over, just hope that they are dead ball turnovers. We'll, you know, we'll set our defense and wait for them to bring it down the court, and not just these ones where it's basically a pick six in football where they just take it all the way to the rack and score. And that those are the ones that really kill us, and those are the ones we have to avoid. And especially, and also the unforced turnovers. We had way too many against Memphis, and I think they sped us up a little bit, especially with that run right before the half. But if we just play our game, you know, handle the things, run the offense like we're supposed to, I think we'll be all right, because we do match up really well with Duke. I mean, the guards, I think, are going to be big, because I think Payne and Kelly will kind of cancel each other out, and maybe the same for Nix and Plumlee. That I'm really looking forward to Nix versus Plumlee, because Nix has been playing like a man possessed. He had a great weekend the first weekend, and I'm hoping he can continue that. You know he wants to play. I mean, if the towel thing showed you anything, it's that guy does not want to stop playing college basketball, and that's what you love to have at this time of year, a senior who does not want to give up the dream, and he's playing like it right now, and I'm ready to follow him as long as he'll carry us.
Thanks for the time, guys. I really appreciate it. Wonderful show.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. So, Aaron, what do you think about the matchups with Duke?
Yeah, no, I think yeah, those three matchups are going to be key. I mean, it's going to be basically Appling against Curry, you know, Payne versus Kelly, and then Nix versus Plumlee. I mean, I think they're all great matchups. I think Michigan State has an edge, but I think it's a very simple game plan,
right?
Really, I mean, they match up well. You stick to what you know and how to do, and what the coach is telling you to do, you execute it just like you've done the last two games. You should be fine. Obviously, the first game against Valpo, that game was over before it started, so it wasn't a real big issue. Against Memphis, you know, they had to execute. They had to do their things right, and when they did do them right, Memphis had no shot.
Exactly,
they had no chance in that game. So I think if Michigan State sticks to their game plan and doing what they know how to do well, like you mentioned, the inside out game, or sometimes the outside, just depending on what the defense is throwing at you.
Exactly.
Because they can play both styles. You know, they should be fine. But you know, Duke can, like you said, pretty much anyone on that team can shoot a three. So threes can kill you. And for some reason, this tournament, I don't know why, I feel like I've seen 100,000 three-pointers being shot.
Oh yeah.
Even when they're not, they shouldn't be, you know.
A majority of them should not have been shot.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Michigan State does a good job of not doing that. I think they're good about not throwing up a three just for throwing up a three.
Right.
They set up their plays. When they shoot their threes, I feel like they have a good shot of actually making it. Harris obviously was lights out the other night,
right,
shooting his threes. Payne obviously his jumper's got a lot better, but he hasn't shot as many, I think, in the tournament. And I think that's wise of him to do that. But I think, to go back to your point about turnovers, I forget the number they had against Memphis exactly off the top of my head, but I can guarantee you that's one thing that Izzo probably got on them about, was the amount of turnovers they had. I think you made a good point about it being just a dead ball turnover, or, you know, if they turn it over and Duke takes it down for 2 points or whatever the case might be, that can be a killer.
Yeah.
Michigan State has always, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, Tom Izzo teams, his team sometimes are just, they turn it over too much. And when they don't turn it over, there's probably stats somewhere. When they don't turn it over under a certain amount, they probably are like, you know,
something crazy. Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, some high winning percentage.
Because even if we're not shooting well, we're such a great rebounding team, and you know, one of the tenets of the program is offensive rebounding. So, you know, as long as we get a shot up, we got a pretty good shot at getting it again if we miss. So, I mean, you know, the turnovers are, I mean, you can't do anything. There's no chance for anything on that possession. It's over. I mean, at least a shot, you got a chance to get it back and start again. And offensive rebounding again, that's another big thing this weekend against Duke. Brendan Dawson on the boards, huge. They have no one who can match up with him. They run the three-guard lineup. He's going to have a size advantage on whoever's playing the three. You know, I think we have to look for him to just be active. He doesn't have to score. He didn't score that well against Memphis at all. And still, he played a great game. And when his energy level is up, the entire team's energy level is up. He, you know, you can tell they all kind of respect him and look up to him. And I think he's a key, because if he is active, if he is jumping over people, grabbing boards, that gets us going. That gets the whole team going. And then the shots start to fall and then we get rolling. But it's all about pounding the glass, playing great defense, and not turning it over. And it looks like we have a caller. Here's Jody on line one. Jody?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Duke as Tubby Smith was fired today at Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Breaking news. Thank you, Jody.
Yeah, Tubby was fired at Minnesota today. I see Duke as kind of similar as far as to Minnesota. I mean to Indiana, with Zeller being, you know, we call Plumlee Zeller. We call Kelly Watford, because he can shoot the jump shot and the three guards. However, they don't have an Oladipo.
I was just gonna say,
you know, but the big thing that, you know, that when you look at Michigan State ball, you know, this year, and maybe the thing that really concerns you is this, you know, this turnovers. You know, you win by 21 and turn the ball over 18 times. That's a heck of a stat.
It really is, and it's troubling. And at the same time, it kind of shows you how good we can be if we take care of the ball.
Right. Right. You know. One good thing is that, you know, I've seen teams run Duke out, not and say out of the gym, but Miami, ran Duke, Maryland ran Duke, you know, and they attacked. So, you know, Michigan State, if they get out and they push the ball at Duke, I think they should have some success. And like you say, you know, the Spartans will rebound.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing, that's going to be a problem, is that playing the high pick and roll, the games that State has had issues with is because, you know, a point guard has always gotten to the rim, whether it was Trey Burke, the guys at Connecticut, or Larkins at Miami, even though those are three good teams. You know, I just see that might be the only thing that could hamper MSU is playing that high pick and roll and getting inside the paint.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's like, you know, that's become the go-to play in basketball in general. And yeah, I mean, I think I've had nightmares of Aaron Kraft carving us up for 18 and a half for weeks now. And yeah, Duke is every bit capable of doing that with Curry and Salomon. They have countless ball handlers that are quick. I mean, obviously they're quick and good at basketball. They play for Duke. So you know that anyone who's on the floor is going to have some talent, and they are going to have to really work on that high screen and roll. And I think if we play a game like, and you know, I know that was probably, this is probably a one in a season effort, but that game against Michigan at home where they just denied Trey Burke everything. And you know, you want to talk about one of the best guards in the country, he's one of them. And you know, Nick's hedging on that high screen and roll so hard, and then they were able to recover and everyone rotated. I don't think they missed a rotation that whole game. If they play with that kind of defensive intensity, I think they can maybe, you know, stifle the pick and roll a little bit, just enough so that it's not, you know, overwhelming. And you know, I think a lot of that depends on Keith's health. Maybe we put Gary Harris on Curry or whoever the ball handler is, because Harris is a great defender. You know, for as good of a shooter as he is, I think he might be better on the defensive end, and he definitely helps us on the defensive end, maybe more than any other freshman we've had in a long time. So I think our effort defensively on that high pick and roll, that's a great point, Jody. And, you know, I think we just got to play our game, control the turnovers, rebound, and yeah, defend that high pick and roll, because that's a bread and butter. And if it's not going to get you a drive to the hoop, it's going to get you an open three somewhere. We got to work on that and play tough, sound defense, as always, versus Duke.
Yeah, see, when you look at that, you know, that high screen and roll, you know, that's the staple in the pro game, as we know.
Exactly.
more of a one-on-one or, you know, pick and pop, pick and roll, pick and, you know, pick and get inside the lane and kick it to the three or drop it to the big. You know, but what you see when you're talking, you know, when you see that, you know, that they didn't miss a rotation against Michigan, and it made you feel that if they could get on a roll like that, you know, that the team was unbeatable.
Exactly.
But they, I know it's hard to keep that kind of intensity, but, you know, it is there.
Exactly. I mean, it's a lot easier said than done, but at the very least it's possible, and we know it's possible with this team.
Yeah, I had one other thing, man. I've been on a rant lately because I'm kind of tired of seeing all these flops. You know, I you see guys getting called for charges when people are just bailing out and falling down.
Right. No,
I always thought, you know, and maybe I'm old school because I play sports in a different era. But, you know, when guys are just falling down and it seems like it's the automatic call, you know, I think it hurts the game.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. And you know, like the Kraft block charge, and it just seems like it's getting a little overboard with the charges. They're giving the defenders too much benefit of the doubt. You know, and like we said, you know, these are bang-bang plays. It's tough to call either way, but it seems like predominantly it's been all offensive fouls this whole tournament. It seems like the whole year.
Even when a guy is going sideways.
Exactly. The defender is still moving, or, you know, and it's like it's such a hard rule to enforce, and it seems like it's giving them trouble, that's for sure. I would prefer seeing more no calls. Just let them go.
You know, or if you're going to call something, you know, maybe this is the marketing of it, but you favor it to the offensive player. Because when you got a 6'10 and 6'11 guy as the last line of defense and a 6'3 guy is coming to the hole, throw a shot. Don't fall down.
Right. Exactly.
You know, when I saw, you know, Zeller kind of got nipped on the side early in the game and he bailed, you know, I thought, come on, man. You know, this 6'11, 7 foot, just go throw the kid shot.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, you know, as Michigan State fans, we've got issues with Zeller as far as taking dives anyway. But, yeah, he's definitely one of the worst defenders. And a lot of times, yeah, it's when guys drive, and even if in the air they're kind of contorting their body to avoid the contact, that defender will slide over, and he still gets the call. And if you're getting the call, you can't say it's a bad play. I mean, you got to keep doing it. If that's how they're going to call it, that's what you got to do. And unfortunately, it seems like more and more we're just getting these weak charge calls, and it's kind of hurting the offensive flow of the game. And, you know, maybe it's one of the reasons that scoring is down so much in the NCAA, you know?
Yeah, I think between that and the ball is kicked out so much for the open jump shot, and teams are falling in love with that jumper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they call it the great equalizer, but you can just as easily shoot yourself out of a game as you can shoot yourself back in it.
You know, I'll give you one stat. The team in the NBA, even though it's a different type of game, the team that's on that 26-game winning streak leads the league in points in the paint. So, you know, no matter how much we like to talk about kicking it out for the three, when it's game time, guys are going to take the ball to the basket and score inside the paint.
Right. I mean, it you know, you're always going to have more options if you're driving and kicking, because you can still kick rather than just chucking up threes. And we've seen teams that, you know, you get hot for a game and you roll somebody, and then the next game you're ice cold. And if you don't have a secondary option, you're going to be going home sooner rather than later.
Yeah, last thing, Florida Gulf Coast, man, I just wanted I've given them little shout-outs everywhere, as they say, because, you know, they're playing ball, and, you know, it's impressive to see a school, you know, a small school down in Florida, they're actually doing it, you know, doing some things. You know, they push the ball, you know, they help on defense, they do everything the way, what they remind me of, and, I mean, this might be blasphemy, is a 79 team with Urban and Kelser and Burks and, you know, and Ron and Jay and those guys, you know, because they would push the ball. You know, I know that's way before your time, but, you know, they push the ball and they'd throw the alley-oops. They had guys on the wings that could hit the jumper, and they also played good defense. So, you know, that's the last thing I wanted to comment on that.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call, Jody, and I couldn't agree more. Florida Gulf Coast getting up and down the floor. They were probably one of the most entertaining teams of the weekend, just in the way they play. They are absolutely fearless. I mean, the alley-oop from Comer to Feeler on Friday night versus Georgetown was probably the highlight of the tournament so far. I mean, they have serious athletes, and they play like it, and they are scared of no one. They beat Miami earlier in the year, and Miami was missing a player, but still, I mean, that's a team that beat Michigan State earlier in the year. So you know they're for real, and they're playing like it. And, you know, they took care of Georgetown, and usually when a team has a huge upset in that first round, you know, that was kind of their highlight of the year, and then they go home, but they keep it rolling over San Diego State, and I'm looking forward to their matchup with Florida because they've got the athletes to compete, but we'll see if they've got the system and the discipline to beat Billy Donovan, who's probably one of the best coaches in the game. So thank you, Jody. We'll talk to you later, and we'll keep things rolling with the tournament here. What do you think of Florida Gulf Coast, Aaron?
Well, I want them to continue to win. I think it's just a great story. It's just one of those stories that sort of America gets behind, and they just want them to win. Will they win it all? No, probably not.
Right.
Can they beat Florida? Well, they've proven they can beat. They've got this far, so
exactly.
It's just a young group with a lot of great chemistry. They're having fun. They're just playing the game well together. Everything's just clicking for them. Let's hope they can keep it going. So Florida is a good team. To be honest, I don't know much about Florida Gulf Coast. Frankly, I don't know how many people do.
I was just going to say, I don't think you're alone in that one.
It's just, and I think they've only been eligible for the tournament 2 years now.
I mean, they've been D1 for less than a decade, and here they are in the Sweet 16. That is a heck of a climb, and congrats to them for what they're doing, and I hope they can continue too, because now it's kind of like now we get three days of stories before the game start again, and it's going to be all about Florida Gulf Coast. So now we're going to get to know them, and I think they're going to gain a lot of fan support from you know that Michigan and Kansas fans are going to be pulling like crazy down in Texas for Florida Gulf Coast, and more power to them, and they should. It's a great story, and they're a fun team to watch. My goodness, was that game awesome on Friday.
Yeah, they're an athletic bunch. Alley-oop, that one, I think his arm extended into the next state, and then he had to bring it back.
Right.
They're an athletic bunch, fun group to watch. So I think it'll be a good game. But to go back to Jody's point about the sort of the charging, a lot of these players, when you watch it in slow-mo, you see their body motion. Even different players, they go the same way every time. And I'm Kratz is a heck of a defender. I'm not saying anything against him, but I can guarantee you him, along with the rest of the team, practice flopping. I used to play basketball back in high school. We practiced it. It happened. I can guarantee you they practice this stuff. And when you see their body jerk back very quickly, but their legs sort of stay put,
mm-hmm.
it's just almost like their top half of the body just goes, down to the floor. That's not natural. That's, usually it's your entire body that goes. But when it just suddenly goes, like, it almost snaps.
Their top half just goes completely limp.
Right. That's just them falling over. And like you said, it's a bang-bang play, so the ref sees it that way for the defensive player, thus it becomes an offensive foul. Again, I don't know if there's anything they can do about it, frankly. It's too quick of a call. It's going to be too difficult to really hone in on that, but I think I agree with you. A good way to kind of get rid of that is just let them play.
Right. And the NBA has this anti-flopping rule that they instituted this year where guys are getting fined. Obviously, you can't do that in college basketball because they're not getting paid anyway. But it just seems like maybe some kind of something to hold this kind of in check. It's getting a little bit out of hand. And look at that, we're just getting warmed up, and it's time to go.
Right, I know. We didn't even get to half of the other games.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have four more days.
We sure do. We'll cover all basketball, everything else we can possibly think of. So thank you for joining me today. I've been Matt Ludke with Aaron Young and Emmanuel Berry in the studio. We'll take it easy for the rest of the day. Be sure to join us tomorrow here on WKAR East Lansing AM 870. Have a pleasant evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
from NPR News in
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.